listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of September 19th, 2017, and episode number 331. And this is your host, as always, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. I haven't had a guest host yet. I don't think that's going to happen. And yes, I'm here to turn on the lights in the darkness of the unknown and allowing you to see the truth. I know that's weird. I just came up with that last week. Anyway, this week's news includes the latest Chicago Mothman, you can call him that, or the Phantom sighting. And we're going to talk about, or I'm going to talk about, you could talk about it too if you want to jump in the chat room, just how hard would it be to actually investigate the Chicago Phantom? We're going to talk cougar craze continues in the UK. And he only wants me for my Bigfoot juice, a tiger spotted or a spotted tiger, and a rare equation. Solar eclipse plus crop circle times fictional planet divided by the Bible plus constellations equals the end of the world. Or I guess I could have called that story, it's the end of the world as we know it, and I feel fine. We'll also have the book of the week and I don't know, maybe some mischief. And again, we're going to have some, there's going to be some interesting discussions here, at least a one-way discussion. But if you want to jump in to the discussion, I'll be peeking in every now and again in the chat room to see what you have to say. And again, you can go to WCJVradio.com and click on the little thing there. It says, listen/join chat now and jump into the chat room, or you could download the app. Yes, there is an app for that available on Apple or Android, and you can listen along and also chat along to the show as well. This week's news is brought to you by the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science. IMHS is a premier online and distance learning university that offers high quality doctorate and doctoral PhD metaphysics degrees that will enhance your life and career, even if your career is not in the metaphysics field. Metaphysics is the scientific study of consciousness, existence, and reality, and includes such topics as theoretical mathematics to quantum physics to cosmology to psychic phenomena. For more information on the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. Fantastic school, let me tell you. And let's see, my anomalous notes for the week, it's pretty small. It's all about me. Well, it's my show, I guess it should be about me, right? Don't forget, my latest book, Handbook for the Amateur UFO Investigator, is now available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and probably a few other places. And if you want a quick link to find them, and you're at the ParanewsInsider.com website, right there on the front of the page, where it has a quick bio about me, you can click on where it says books. I wrote six books. It'll take you right to my books page, and you can check them all out, from cryptozoology to ghosts to my latest book, Handbook for the Amateur UFO Investigator. And the events listing is updated. As far as I know, the events that I'm aware of for 2017 and a few poking their head in for 2018. The list has more crosses off than it does events left, however, because obviously it's middle of September. And looking ahead to I guess that's this weekend. Wow, it's the 23rd this weekend already. HillCon is coming up. HillCon 2017 in Newcastle, Pennsylvania, at the famous, the haunted Hillview Manor. And that's going to be an interesting event. That was another one I was going to go to, but probably not going to make it. Robin Swope will be there. I know Audrey Hamilton is speaking there. And also Amy Boo will be there. Fred Saluga, Brian Seach will also be at that event. And Brett McGinnis will also be speaking. There's a couple other people that I can't remember off the top of my head that will be there as well. And let's see. That's it for this weekend as far as ghost stuff is concerned. The Granbury Paranormal Expo takes place September 30th through October 1st in Granbury, Texas. Nice little town. I lost my football down there once. Long story. Chicago Ghost Con 9 is the first weekend in October, October 6th through the 8th. I think that's the first. I think it's the second week. Yeah, it's the first weekend. I'm going to argue with myself live here on the air. There's a whole bunch here that's coming up in October. October is obviously what I call the silly season. That's when everybody and their brother all of a sudden wants to learn about ghosts. All of a sudden they have a ghost that they want investigated. And all of a sudden we're all famous. And we're all being interviewed for all sorts of stuff. The UFO arena looks like nothing until the first weekend of October. The Greater New England UFO Conference in Leominster, Massachusetts. And in cryptozoology, the second annual Summer's End Squatch Watch takes place Friday and Saturday in Sheffield, Pennsylvania. I have a lot of friends down there at that one as well. Gonna miss that one too. I kind of was in between these two, but just ultimately decided either one of them. Kind of stinks, but that's I can't go out every weekend. And let's see. Well, nothing until October. I also missed the Mothman Festival, and kind of a long story about that. I won't get too far into that. I almost had a chance to speak at the last minute down there, but I had to work. Plus, it was my 11-year anniversary, so I don't want to get in the doghouse over going to a convention. And for me, what am I going to do? I have a few radio appearances coming up in October. I'll be on Arcane Radio right here on WCJVRadio.com on October 5th. October 8th, I'll be back on Beyond the Edge Radio with host Eric Altman. And October 23rd, I'll be live at the Westerville Public Library just outside of Columbus, Ohio, for my ninth consecutive year doing a ghost hauntings and the paranormal little thing there. It's a lot of fun. And every year I handcraft a new event there for that. And I usually go a long time, usually talk for quite a while. November 3rd and the 4th, I'll be at the Bedford Springs Hotel doing the excavation of Victorian ghosts at Bedford Springs in Bedford, Pennsylvania, with host John Sable. A few days later, I'll be on another radio show. And in December, I'll be on the Mallard Report. I can't believe it. I'm back on the Mallard Report. You know how great that is? He's a famous guy. That's December 5th. Looking forward to that. And we'll see what else happens. I'm sure I can cause some more trouble between now and the end of the year. And don't forget, speaking of the end of the year, one of the first big events of the year next year, the Twinsburg Paranormal Conference. And I will be hosting this event. I'm crazy, I know. February 17th, 2018, right here in my hometown, Twinsburg, Ohio. Yeah, good luck trying to find it on the map. We're smack dab in between Cleveland and Akron, Ohio, about a half hour each way to each one of those cities. Great, great area to host one of these events. There's been some down in the Columbus area, a few over in Dayton, Ohio. We had one kind of in the area. It was in Rootstown a few years ago, and now Twinsburg. So Ohio's been kind of left out. Seems like Pennsylvania gets all the ones in this area. So I've put together my own my own little event here. And Colin Schneider, who is the host of the Crypto Kid radio show on Mondays right here on WCJV, will be speaking. Audrey Hamilton, who is the one and only guest to the Paranormal News Insider, will be speaking. And also Brandon Masullo, he's got a new book coming out pretty soon, will be speaking. Ronald L. Murphy Jr., who I've talked about numerous books of his here on the show. Scott Sukel, who is the former ghost hunt manager and historian at the Ohio State Reformatory, will be speaking. Amy Boo, who I just mentioned, she's part of the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization, BFRO. You know those guys. She's going to be at the event. Northeast Ohio Bigfoot researcher. Awesome to have her on board. And also Aaron Clark, who is the co-director for the Cleveland Ufology Project, which was founded back in 1952. And it's tied in with MUFON. And I just kind of wanted to have something unique for this area and for Ohio. And, you know, everybody has MUFON guys, and MUFON has their own events. So I thought, why not get the cup involved? So I'm excited about this event and really looking forward to this. And I hope you are too. Tickets are on sale now. You can go to twinsburgparanormal.com and get your tickets now. Because prices will be going up after the beginning of the year. I've not announced that yet on the website, but that's what's going to have to happen if I'm going to be able to pay for this facility. Anyway, now to the news. That's what you tuned in for, right? That's what you paid for. Well, you didn't pay for anything. I hope not to listen to this show. Cryptid news. I think this show should just be called Cryptozoology News Insider, because this week I have a slew of stories. And we're going to talk a lot about the Chicago Phantom. I know that's Lon Strickler's wheelhouse right there, and his show is on Thursday nights. But Tuesday, you get a little preview of this, and I won't go into too much detail on this particular story. But I do want to cover something that was kind of a discussion. But before I do that, the Chicago Phantom has been seen once again. In a report to Manuel Navarrete at UFO Clearinghouse, a woman reported seeing what she thought was a large person, but with huge black wings and glowing orange eyes, while she was walking home after shopping at around 11 p.m. Central Time. Seems to be the curfew, I think. 11 o'clock is like the latest I've ever seen a report. I mean, it's got a curfew. She thought this might be a large owl, but then she realized it was 7 feet tall. She felt compelled to walk toward the creature. I have no idea why. And while she did it, she said it let out a chirping sound. She thought this might be the devil as she walked toward it while praying to herself. Suddenly, the creature let out a loud screech and took off into the air, flying away from her. The woman was very shaken when she returned home, and she relayed the story to her family. Now, her grandmother thought it could be the devil or a lechuza. Now, we've heard the word lechuza in these reports before, and a lechuza is a Mexican, essentially Mexican oral piece of folklore, and it essentially describes a woman who can turn into an owl, typically an owl or other bird. And lechuza, if you try to translate that word, translates directly into owl. So, weird. But, you know, as they say, I mean, everybody knows this. Las lechuzas por regular no son peligrosas. Well, for my non-Spanish speaking listeners, the owls are not normally dangerous. So typically, the lechuza is not dangerous. So that might be good news for the people of Chicago. And you can hear more about these sightings as well as the latest information behind the Chicago Phantom sightings this Thursday during Arcane Radio with hosts Sean Forker, Butch Witkowski, and Lon Strickler at 10 p.m. Eastern, again, right here on WCJVRadio.com. And their guest this week is Rosemary Ellen Guiley, who has got some information of her own about Mothman. I guess she spoke about Mothman, or the Chicago Mothman, at the Mothman Festival. So Just take a breath here and think about this first. Let me get myself into this mode here. Now, how would one investigate the Chicago Phantom? We've been following this story here on the Paranormal News Insider for quite a long time, a few months now, which is really long for any story that I've ever followed. I've never seen a case that has had 48 sightings related to it. No UFO, no cryptid, no Bigfoot in a specific area. Ghost sightings, I mean, ghost sightings are a little bit different here, but this is a question. I've actually been thinking about this since these sightings took off back in May when they were starting to one a week, two a week. I thought, what would it take to get out there and investigate this based on things that I've done in the past? Now, I've put on smaller field investigations with multiple people together in the woods as well as in buildings, abandoned buildings, for ghost hunts in different places like Mansfield Reformatory and different things like that, trying to kind of figure out how to investigate an area all at once. But I've never even thought of doing anything like this in a large metropolitan city, let alone for a flying object. But then I kind of thought about it, and I have attempted to follow bald eagles and even a great blue heron once to get better photographs of them while kayaking. So I guess I kind of do have a little bit of experience in chasing flying things. And I've even tracked the Goodyear blimp a few times over the years for the same thing, to take pictures, not for anything weird. But that's pretty easy when you know where the blimp is going to go or where it's actually based out of here near Akron, Ohio. Now, the reason for me talking about this here on the show is I was involved in a conversation with someone on social media that essentially started with this person saying, if there's so many sightings, why hasn't anyone gone out there to look for this creature? He said there is a, quote, embarrassment of riches, unquote, with the mounting number of sightings in Chicago. So since there's so many documented sightings, especially grouped in various parts of the city, why is there not a team of people out there or at least waiting for it to appear? And this is a great question or series of questions. And I really agree with this person. One thing that really bothers me about the paranormal is this wait and see style of obtaining information about cases such as these. But however, there's a lot more than this in this particular story. I mean, yes, paranormal teams do go out in the field in search of ghosts, Bigfoot, UFOs, even fairies and a lot of other things. And not fairies like things that carry cars, but, you know, the little things that fly around. Anyway. Many times these teams are fooled by their own feelings and observations, but would this really be an issue when looking for a 7-foot-tall black bat-shaped creature with huge wings in Chicago? Now, first things first, while we know that Lon Strickler has been interviewing folks by phone and disseminating reports and keeping track of them through phantomsandmonsters.com, Manuel Navarrete and his UFO clearinghouse team have been actively investigating each case as they are reported. So yes, there are boots on the ground in Chicago looking for this creature, following up on these reports, I'm assuming they're trying to get ahead of this thing, or at least trying to get photographs or determine what is the cause behind this, if this is actually a legitimate story, which, my goodness, 48 sightings, 48 reports, it better be legit, or this is probably the most massive hoax ever perpetrated in the history of anything. I mean, this is drawn out for essentially 6 years, going back to 2011. So it's not just a bunch of people hiding behind keyboards in mommy's basement, no matter what you might think. There are people out there and they are looking. I know I've done what little I can do here in Twinsburg, Ohio, kind of disseminating information myself, looking at things in my own way, crunching, even looking at words, word usage in these reports and different things, trying to figure out just what's going on. There's not a whole lot to do unless you're in Chicago or you have the ability to go out there. But like I said, I've thought about what it would take to try and find this thing, even though I realize how slim of a chance it would be to send a team into a city that's 234 square miles. That's huge. I don't know how you could possibly even think about investigating something like this. I mean, it's just huge. I mean, I'm going to share a couple pictures during this presentation, or I should say this, it's, I guess it is kind of a presentation, talking about this segment here. And the first picture is looking toward from the west to the east here in Chicago. Now, one thing I'll pause here in the middle of, I saw the word drone. Now, a drone being caused, or the ca I should say the cause for the Chicago Phantom, or a way to actually search for the Chicago Phantom. That's two different aspects you could take with a drone. However, drones are extremely limited to distance, elevation, and the legality of flying one in a major metropolitan city, especially when you're talking about the windiest city in the United States. It's not called the Windy City for nothing. And you can't fly one around certain places. There's two major sports stadiums. There's two semi, well, one's a major international airport and another regional airport that you cannot fly a drone anywhere near. Sports, the college, the university that this thing was seen next to, it's illegal to fly one there as well. I've looked into that. And as far as searching for this creature with a drone, again, you're very limited as to the distance, and the cameras really are pretty limited as well. They've tried this for Bigfoot. They've tried this for other cryptids with very, very little luck over the years. It's worth utilizing, I think, in a small area if you want to chase this thing or try to get close to it. But you're gonna have to have a really good one, and you're gonna have to be very, very careful as to where you fly this thing. Now, I mentioned Chicago, the city, 234 square miles. That's huge. That's a lot of land to cover to look for something even as big as this creature is purportedly, with the wings and the height, 7 foot tall. Now, for comparison's sake, Boston, it's only 89 square miles, and New York City, 469 square miles, nearly twice the size of Chicago. But Chicago is still a large area to cover, and if you've never been there, you really have no scale. I mean, I've flown in there numerous times. I've been in different parts of the Chicago, but I'm telling you what, to put it all together, it's just huge. Now, Chicago does rank third in the U.S. in population with 2.7 million people. And some people have commented that with that many people, why are there not more reports, or how come people aren't seeing this, or how come there's not more pictures? Well, just because there's more people to help find our flying friend, that's actually kind of works against you if you're actually in the city trying to maneuver through the city to track it. And with so many people in the area, something like this actually, when you're looking at psychology, might actually go more unnoticed than in a rural area that's a little less congested. People aren't really looking for this kind of stuff. And it's just one of those things when you're in your day-to-day routine, you just don't look for things anyway. And when you're in a crowded city with so much noise and things moving around and buildings, and you just don't notice these things until they're sitting on a pole right in front of you, I guess. Now, Chicago ranks 14th in population density, with roughly 3,500 people per square mile on average. Stone Park, Cicero, and Berwyn are the densest areas of Chicago. And these areas rank just behind incorporated areas of New York City and Los Angeles. And we know Cicero's had a few sightings, but it's weird because these are usually at night. And again, an area of dense population does not guarantee a sighting of this creature. It's all about timing. And I don't know about you, but I've been downtown to at least to Cleveland, Akron, a few other major metropolitan cities at night. And let me tell you, they're desolate. People don't live downtown all that much. They go there to drink and party, sporting events, different things like that. But they don't really live down there that much. So it city's kind of empty out. And they go to the burbs. They go to the outlying areas, especially the ones that I've just mentioned. Now, enough about population statistics. So what would it take to go and find this creature? And with this compared to going to a ghost hunt or a Bigfoot expedition. And again, like I said, let me reiterate, Manuel Navarrete has spent some time searching for this creature. He lives in the Chicago area. His team is out looking for this. But again, even with a large team, it's trying to find a needle in a haystack. Initially, when I contemplated this question before this conversation I had, I compared it to a regular cryptozoological expedition with a number of teams scouring an area. And initially, I thought it would probably take six teams of maybe two people. And with that, you're going to have one person who's communicating with the other groups, as well as probably navigating or determining distances or direction, and another person who's the observer. And these people can switch off as time allows to do surveillance. And these teams would do surveillance in the highest concentrated areas of sightings. And let me throw another picture in the chat room of the Chicago Pier area. So again, this is one area looking at Chicago where some of these sightings have occurred within this picture that you're looking at. And just imagine trying to observe anything. Now, if you're in one of those high-rise buildings looking down at the Chicago Pier, you'd think you'd have an easy chance of spotting this thing. But again, just because it's big doesn't mean you're going to see this. You can't see as far as you think you can, even in a large city. Now, back to these teams. If I did have six teams, three of these teams would be posted either in high areas or wide open areas so they could observe and look for movement to look for this flying creature and would be stationary for the most part and obviously use binoculars or even telescopes or monoculars or something. Now, another three teams would be positioned between or around these teams and be mobile in order to intercept a potential sighting in order to get a photograph, video, and especially to identify what this creature is. Now, however, when I started to look at this area a little closer, at the eastern edge of this area from tip to tip of these sightings is about 20 miles in length. Six teams, there's no way that six teams of people spread out even by 2 miles because they wouldn't be able to overlap. They wouldn't be able to see the same things at the same detail. There's no way that six teams could cover even half of that area, let alone a majority of it. Again, we're talking a downtown area, traffic, buildings, aircraft, smog, all sorts of stuff going on. It'd just be a lot harder than what people think to actually track this thing down in a major metropolitan city. Now, even focusing a few teams in these areas that have had sightings in the past, it would be fruitless. The smaller the area, the less chance you have to see something. Even if the creature was spotted, again, it would be difficult to maneuver through the city quick enough to give chase. And what I've done, I've looked at these reports and I've essentially cut this into four parts. One quarter would be along Lake Michigan with the many parks that line the beachfront, such as Lincoln Park, Millennium Park, Grant Park, Burnham Park, and so on. State Route 41 cuts along the edge of these parks between the tall buildings and the Lake Michigan there. And you can see that in the picture that I just put up. The tall building area essentially is what I would create the second quarter. Anything in those large buildings, I would call the central part of Chicago. And this area is where the north and south branches of the Chicago River are, and they come together right in the center of the city and go out into Lake Michigan. The central area pushes north to the western edge of Lincoln Park and south essentially to where Interstate 55 cuts east and west. The other two quarters are north and south Chicago, and those are split between the Chicago River, and then when that cuts in and goes north and south, then we would pick up Lake Street that runs east and west. And that seems to me to be the best way to split the city into four distinct parts. Now, breaking this down, of the 48 current sightings, 15 sightings have happened along the lakeshore in the eastern quadrant, 7 have occurred in the downtown area, 7 in the northern region, and 19 in the southern part of Chicago. Now, odds would be that the southern part of Chicago would be the place you'd want to look. Now, even concentrating on the southern part of Chicago with 19 sightings would be a monumental task. It's 23 miles north to south of where these sightings were, and over 100 square miles of area to cover. I don't know about you, but that's a lot of space. That's a lot of land. That's a lot of real estate. And there's a lot of obstacles in your way if you're traveling through that area. I know this is a lot of information to take in, but it's worth really digging into this, because I know if one person thinks this, there's a lot of other people. And I know I've thought about it too. Just how do we investigate the Chicago Phantom? You're tuned into WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVradio.com. And you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And be sure to listen in later on tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern. Chris DeCesare and Phil Casey will present Surviving Evidence. And their guest tonight will be Tom Conwell, ufologist and author. And again, that's at 9 p.m. Eastern or 8 p.m. Central. I don't know where you live. You can figure it out. And let's see, tomorrow night, Kat Hobson with Paranormal Experienced, and she's going to have Butch Witkowski and Lon Strickler. Again, that's 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, tomorrow night at WCJVradio.com. And definitely go to WCJVradio.com and check out the entire lineup. It would take me a half hour to read all those. So definitely check out this lineup. So back to Chicago, what would it take to investigate this Chicago Phantom anomalous creature that's flying around? Well, this creature is 7 foot tall with a large wingspan. I know that sounds big, but you're going to have an awful hard time to spot this thing with the naked eye, even a half mile away. So, you know, if you look at the amount of area, even with binoculars, you're limiting your viewing area. You're able to see further, but you can't see as much information. Very difficult to track something like this, especially with all the buildings and things moving around and cars everywhere. A mile or more in a large city, very difficult to track something like that. On top of all this, again, the logistical nightmare of navigating a bunch of teams through the streets of Chicago. And then again, there's also the cost factor. This person didn't like when I talked about this, thought it was something with the government or something. I don't know what he said, but spending the night in Chicago is not cheap. Trust me, I looked at this. I looked this up back when I took a vacation back at the end of July, and actually contemplated. I had the Kecksburg UFO Festival and then the Goose event the beginning of September. I'm sorry, the beginning of August. What did I have? I don't remember. Anyway, there was an event in the beginning of August. Actually, that was the Strange Encounters Festival in Pennsylvania. So I contemplated, well, I had the week to go somewhere. And I thought about it. And I looked up, I did some research, and I figured out it would cost me way more than what I was willing to spend just to spend the night anywhere near downtown Chicago. It averages $180 a night. That sounds pretty expensive. And some people may say, well, that doesn't sound too bad, but you add taxes onto that and you add multiple nights and it gets out of control really, really fast. And bigger buildings in certain areas comes a bigger cost, and it could be up to $400 to $500 a night. I just don't have that kind of money. I don't know if somebody wants to fund me to go and find the Chicago Phantom. Sure. If you want to write me a check, I'll be out there in a heartbeat. Here's a little picture I just threw in the chat room. If you're live in the chat room, you can click on that. And those are the current prices of hotels in downtown Chicago. So you can check those out and see if you want to book a room with the window with a view. And you can look for the Chicago Phantom yourself. Now, obviously, it would be critical to sleep in as close to the area of interest as possible. And since the events seem to range from 11 a.m. to 11 p.m., and we don't know if this thing is nocturnal or what, just seems to make those appearances between those hours from the cases that I've looked at, the team would have to be active in this time span. And I would say not have to waste a half hour to an hour driving in and out of town every day. And if you're doing this during the week, you're going to have a hard time driving through the streets again. And again, it would probably take many days, if not weeks, to chase this thing down, even with a large crew of people. So many different things that we're talking about here that's just would just get in the way, observing in a big city. Now, I'd love to go down there if somebody's willing to write me a check for it. I'd love to be the next Carl Kolchak. But, I mean, with Emmanuel Navarette and the UFO Clearinghouse team following up on reports, Lon Strickler helping him out, and a bunch of other inner circle guys working on this, I think that's really the best you can do with the situation right now. Traipsing around Chicago with a bunch of paranormal researchers, even ufologists, trying to track this thing down with a dart gun in the back of a Jeep, I don't recommend that. I don't think it'd be very worthwhile. And we can continue this conversation at another time. But I want to move on. I think it's done. We're going to go to the United Kingdom. So grab your passport. Nora Rothrock looked out of her window and spotted a mountain lion eating an adult cat in her backyard. Wow. Well, the Los Angeles native took a picture of the cougar to show authorities. So what makes this a cryptid story? Well, the woman grew up in L.A., but recently saw this cat in her backyard in Hampstead, which is in London, which is in England, which doesn't have mountain lions or cougars or pumas or panthers. Now, I recently mentioned mountain lion sightings in St. Albans, which is about 20 miles away from this particular location. Now, Mrs. Rothrock contacted the London Zoo, which stated they were not missing a mountain lion, and authorities are looking at the photograph to determine if this is a mountain lion, and if it's not, what kind of a cat is it? Well, I'm not an expert, but I do love cats, large cats, I should say, not so much Felis catus. Sorry, guys. But I can easily tell that this is not a cougar. It's not that hard. It's definitely a pretty decent-sized cat, but I don't think it's huge. I don't think it's 4 feet, whatever she said it was. But it's not a mountain lion. It has white paws and a white-ringed tail. And I have a picture I can share with you here in the chat room, if I can find him. There he is. So in this picture you're going to see a mountain lion on the top left. A juvenile cougar, and well, I guess I wrote the words on there. Adult cougar to the right, and there's our mystery cat down there at the bottom, eating a cat. Yikes. Well, the body structure is completely wrong for a mountain lion, not even close. And I'm not sure. I don't think it's a type of another wildcat. I think it's just a feral cat, which those can get pretty big in England, but. The more that people have commented on this and the more that I'm looking at this, I'm pretty sure this is just a regular house cat. And many people have also said that the cat's probably not eating another cat, which I don't think they really do. But it looks like a pigeon. Looks like a pigeon, which would be a normal thing for a house cat to eat. Other photographs of purported mountain lions have been seen recently and also appear to be just wild cats. And I don't know what's going on. There seems to be a lot of fear over the potential of a mountain lion roaming north of London. So yeah, that's not a, it's not a mountain lion. It looks just like a regular house cat. Yeah. Nothing to worry about. Wouldn't be a bobcat. And I don't think bobcats and mountain lions can do the deed, do the thing. I don't know. They look kind of weird. So let me throw, well, you already saw the picture, but I'm going to throw the story in the chat room. And again, if you're not in the chat room, you're missing out on some additional photographs, some stuff that I've created as well as links to these stories. And again, you can go to wcjvradio.com and click on the Listen Live tab there, and you can jump in the chat room, or you don't have to. You can just jump in there and listen. Either way, I'd appreciate it. And now, the biggest viral story in cryptozoology this week, probably the biggest story in the paranormal this week, and I'm sure you've heard about this one. If you haven't, you've been looking at too many cat pictures. A woman in North Carolina claims to have created a spray that can attract a Bigfoot from up to a mile and a half away. I don't know why a mile and a half, but anyway, I'm usually a little put off by the way newspapers cover stories involving Bigfoot or even cryptids for that matter, but I found the opening line of the Charlotte Observer quite comical. The headline read, quote, North Carolina mom invents a spray she says will attract any Bigfoot within a mile and a half. And it's the first line of the story written by Mark Price that says, quote, the nation's endless search for proof of Bigfoot's existence may soon come to an end, unquote. I thought it was funny. I don't think it's meant to be funny, but it's just the way he says it, that it's going to come to an end. Sadly, this woman is going to prove that Bigfoot exists. I don't know. I thought it was funny. I guess I have a dry sense of humor. I don't think he's serious about the statement. I think it's meant to be a little sarcastic. Now, Allie Megan Webb operates Happy Body Care out of her home in Marion, North Carolina, and she created the product called Bigfoot Juice. Bigfoot Juice, that's what it's called. It's kind of like pimp juice, I guess, for Bigfoot. And she invented it at her kitchen table. Now, the Bigfoot Juice is said to be environmentally friendly and can be yours for just $7 a bottle. But that's not all. The Bigfoot Juice also doubles as bug spray. Okay. If that's not the selling point, I don't know what is. Actually, the product started out as bug spray, but Allie's husband, Corey, asked for something a little less, quote, feminine smelling, unquote, and the product was born. Now, this goes back to the story of that group I mentioned a few weeks ago called Bigfoot 911 that purportedly came across a Bigfoot and turned their subjective event into a national story. Now, they claimed the Bigfoot juice had a lot to do with this sighting. And when asked about the effectiveness, Webb stated, quote, how do you know it works? That's a tough question. I guess I could ask, how do you know it doesn't work? Unquote. Whoa, she got us there. I don't know. Maybe I better buy a barrel of this stuff and go out in the woods. Good stuff. No, don't buy any of this stuff. No, don't do it. Don't buy it. Don't buy into it, I should say. I don't think it would really work. There's no proof. No validation here. That's actually pretty cheap, though, when you look at deer scent and other things, other tools to attract or lure wild animals. It's pretty cheap. Okay. Let's see. One last story here in cryptid news. The Javan tiger was one of the 9 species of tigers in the world and was sadly hunted into extinction over the course of 200 years due to hunting. The Javan tiger was officially listed as extinct in 2003 by the International Union for the Conservation of Nature's Red List, following no sightings of the animal since 1976. Java is home to Jakarta, the capital of Indonesia, and is the most populous island in the world. Sorry, Hawaii, with 145 million people living on the 620-mile-long by 130-mile-wide island. Like many other extinct or extirpated animals, people have been hopeful that the Javan tiger still exists in the mountains somewhere and have been looking for them since they were declared extinct. Actually, before they were declared extinct, a wildlife ranger in West Java's Ujung Kulon National Park photographed what is believed to be a Javan tiger last month. The photograph is highly debated and is thought to be by many, including myself, to not be a Javan tiger, but a Javan leopard, which are still critically endangered. I love the headline here of the story. A lot of people have this similar headline. And the Smithsonian online says, quote, long thought extinct Javan tiger may have been spotted in Indonesia, unquote. The New York Times has a headline that says, quote, tiger species thought extinct is possibly spotted in Indonesia, unquote. I love that because they says spotted like a leopard. Brum-bum. Don't get it? Okay, well, it'll hit you later on. Let's see. I have a picture here. I'm going to share in the chat room. Mr. Java, here is a blown-up look at this purported tiger. Now, you know tigers have stripes, and leopards, they have spots. Now, what's throwing people off is the leg. You see the inside leg of the left rear leg of this creature, and it looks like it has stripes. But if you look at pictures of leopards, their spots on the legs make it appear, if you squint your eyes, they may appear as stripes there. But you can see the rest of that coat is obviously little dots and not so much stripes of a tiger. Plus, the body shape is all wrong for that. And let me, here's another photograph here I'll throw in here that I put together for you guys. This shows multiple creatures. Here you have the photograph there at the top that was taken from this video. You have a Javan leopard there in the center, and you have the extinct and pretty much stuffed Javan tiger there at the bottom. He's taxidermied and a little worn for his use, it looks like. Maybe the kids rode it around in the living room. I don't know what happened, but there's a comparison. And if you're in the chat room, you can click on that and it'll blow up a little bit and you can look at those. But again, if you look at that leopard there in the middle and squint your eyes, kind of looks like stripes. So that's pretty much the explanation there. And a lot of people are also kind of going in with that explanation as well. Unfortunately, I mean, I'd love to see this poor cat come back. And unfortunately, I don't think this is it. And we got a scroll. Sorry, no UFO news or ghost news tonight, but we're going to go to probably, I don't know if it's scary or it's just depressing or it's interesting or it's argumentative. Let me stir the pot here with this story. It's kind of conspiracy, I guess. And there's a couple of videos, but I'm not going to play the videos here yet. The world as we know it has come to an end. That's right. It's over. This weekend, Saturday, it's done. We're over. Call off of work. Sell your car. Go on vacation. Do whatever you want to do. It's over. Now, as I reported a couple weeks ago, it's official. September 23rd is predicted to be the last day of Earth. Or maybe not. We don't know. Well, that's according to a YouTube video. And it has to be true because it has over, well, I don't know if it's over. It's close to 2.9 million views. Look out, Justin Bieber. And over a dozen videos have copied this same message in their own unique little ways. But this one is pretty cool. I'll give you the link a little second here. The description of the video claims that the date is merely a sign that the Earth will not end on September 23rd, despite what the video shows. And this might not be the day of the rapture, or it might be. I mean, come on, pick it. Pick, either it is or it isn't. And the description says, quote, "No to all scoffers. This is just a sign. The rapture might not happen on this exact day. Could be this week, next week, or months from now. But we are getting close. Scoff at your own risk. And for the record, the world won't end for at least 1,000 years, unquote. Man, so much for calling off of work. Well, this video essentially states that a combination of stars that occur over Israel and Jerusalem during the day is a sign that all of this is about to happen. Christian conspiracy theorist David Mead also agrees that September 23rd is an important date for the Earth. He states that the fictional planet Nibiru will arrive and bring the end of days. The crop circle discovered in Essex, England, just 6 days before the U.S. total eclipse on August 21st, was said to have been a sign of things to come. And remember, I covered that story. Now, the crop circle purportedly, was interpreted to represent a specific chapter in Revelations that represented John's vision of Christ. Now, I could tear into this verse. I'm not Mr. Biblical, but trust me, I know my history, and I know certain things about the Bible that would astound people that know me. But for the sake of leaving religion out of this, let's just say this is a very loose interpretation of this verse, let alone the chapter. And for many others, the crop circle looked like the Death Star from Star Wars fame. Now, I got to admit, when I first saw the picture of the crop circle, that was the first thing that popped into my mind. It wasn't about the eclipse. It was that, man, that thing looks like the Death Star firing a shot. I don't know. Now, Mead also quotes the Revelations chapter 12, verse 1 that the YouTube video relies on. He also says that astronomical models that the sign has never occurred in human history. Whoa, what? So as soon as I read that, I thought, well, that's a challenge. Now, according to my research, this isn't all that rare, actually, in all honesty. And I use my Stellarium software, which is what the original video did way back in 2011. And I found this to be false. And I also researched what other people said about this, and they also said false. And leaving out a lot of specifics, I don't want to get too far into this tonight. If we live, maybe next week we can talk about it. I'll just say that the sun is in the constellation Virgo, which is part of this whole thing, every September. That part is every year. It doesn't change. The moon will also appear at Virgo's feet at least once or twice a year, especially during September. And even the emergence of Jupiter. And all of this happens about every 12 years. So despite the claim that this event happens is the first time in history, this actually, all of these different things that they're talking about actually happen about every 12 years, give or take. Sometimes they're not quite as lined up as what they are, and you have to go hundreds of years, but it's not like it's completely unprecedented. And this essentially is the difference between astrology and astronomy. Now, astronomy is the study of the universe and its contents outside of Earth's atmosphere. Astronomers examine positions, motions, and properties of celestial objects. Now, astrology, on the other hand, attempts to study how these positions, motions, and properties affect people and events on Earth. For several millennia, the desire to improve astrological predictions was one of the main motivations for astronomical observations and theories. However, as astronomy progresses, astrology has pretty much stayed the same over 4,000 years of history and remains a pseudoscience and mere entertainment. But thank goodness for it, because we wouldn't have astronomy. We wouldn't understand the stars. We wouldn't be able to talk about the things that we're talking about here, and we'd all be running for cover, hiding in caves, and pretending like we don't know what's going on. Now, like I mentioned, this whole thing started back in 2011 by William Tapley, who shared a YouTube video, go figure, on this same subject using Stellarium software, which is the same software that I used and other people have used to prove that this whole entire story is hogwash. But I don't know. Maybe we'll, maybe the rapture will happen. And if it does, I'm sure I'll be here next week on the show, so I'm not worried about that. And if the Earth's not going to be destroyed for 1,000 years, well, what's the problem here? I don't know. Anyway, let me throw the link. I have three links to this story. I'll throw the express.co.uk link. Those are always truthful. Yeah. And if you're interested, this is great music in this video on the YouTube thing here. It's great. Crank it up and watch it in the dark. It's great. Great visuals in this too. It's really really produced very well. I was really astounded with this video. I think they did a fantastic job. It's not accurate, but it's cool. And again, very loose interpretation of some biblical stuff. And if you're interested in reading about the space aspect, the astronomical aspect, instead of the astrological aspect, here's a link to that as well in the chat room. So yeah, if you're not in the chat room, you're missing out on a lot of great conversation, as well as links, videos, photographs, and a whole lot more. And that is perfect. That leaves me just enough time to talk about the book of the week. I didn't think I was going to have time, but boom, I do. So the book of the week this week, I wanted to do something with, I almost did a ghost book, but I changed my mind. When I started doing, yeah, definitely want to watch that later. When I started talking about this, or started reading about this end of the world thing, and it was one of those things I wasn't even going to talk about, but I thought, you know what? I see a lot of steam picking up on this. I see a lot of conversations about this online. A lot of people sharing this story on social media, and it's something that, you know, again, I'm not the most religious person in the world. I am a very spiritual person, but not religious. But I do understand religions, the history of religions, and you know, I'm not a Bible thumper, but I do understand the Bible, and I understand how people interpret things and how some people get a little carried away. And you know, I really feel that people need to know the truth. And that's why I wanted to discuss that. But you also need to know the truth about what's really up there, what's really out there. And that's where the book of the week comes in. And that's why I've chosen a book here about, that's right, about astronomy. And this is a book I came across, or if I remember correctly, I was actually at a speaking engagement in Cleveland, and I was at a library at the Cleveland Community College, and I was going through their library, and I found this book, and I was going to buy it because it's a great resource. I've been able to went in, actually went into, I shouldn't admit this on the air, but I went into a bookstore and I looked through it to look up some information, wrote it down, and then went home. I feel guilty. I feel bad about it. Maybe I'll buy it. I don't know. The book of the week this week is Astronomy 101, From the Sun and Moon to Wormholes and Warp Drives, Key Theories, Discoveries, and Facts About the Universe. And this is by Carolyn Collins Peterson. And this is a pretty interesting book. It's pretty thick when you first pick it up. And I thought it would be jam-packed with great information. And I was correct. It's 288 pages. It's a pretty thick book, but it reads really, really fast. I was really amazed by how fast you can read through this book, especially when you're standing in a library and you have about 300 people waiting for you to talk. Took me about 45 minutes really to go through the book, but a lot of it I've just found astounding. Great facts, great information, and it's really the way it's put together kind of blew me away too. And it's why I instantly remembered this book when I was doing research on some stuff for space and some planets. And this had, at the time, I think this book is from 2013. Yeah, 2013. So it's not wholly 100% accurate. Now, obviously, things change quite frequently. But when you're talking about the planets, the local planets here in our solar system, Mercury, Mars, Saturn, Neptune, so on and so forth, those are really not going to change that much. That information's quite accurate, and it's researched very well. The author, she has an extraordinary deep background as a writer, as a producer, and as an astronomer. And she has a ton of books to her credit as far as planetary science is confirmed or concerned. So trust her research and trust her information that she presents in this book. And the book is just laid out so interesting. It first goes into astronomy lingo, talks about the solar system as a whole, then it starts breaking everything down individually. Talks about the sun, talks about space weather, which is created by the sun. And space weather is obviously something that people in the paranormal talk about quite often, especially in the ghost field. At least they should know or understand what space weather is and how it actually affects Earth, and not just say, well, it creates ghosts, man. because it doesn't, but that's beside the point. Creates a whole lot of other interesting things that if you're a ghost researcher, you better understand. Then it goes into the planets, including Earth, which is weird because we live here. But it goes into some of the numbers involved and some of the other aspects of Earth that you might not realize or might not understand. And it just keeps going further out into the solar system. Talks about meteors, meteorites, asteroids, different stars, star clusters, the life and death of stars, black holes, galaxies, the Milky Way itself. That gets into some really interesting stuff like dark matter, gravitational lenses, and just kind of then looks at the history of astronomy, which I found interesting. Was another reason why I wanted to pick this book back up. And it goes into a lot of different astronomers throughout history, and different people that had an effect on where we're at today. And if you're interested in space at all, or learning about space, and it's really sad because I grew up in the era with the space shuttle, and people wanted to be they wanted to be astronauts. It was something to look forward to. We had heroes that went into space. And you know, our parents saw the landing on the moon, if you believe in that. And what do kids have now? I mean, they have the International Space Station. It's just not as cool, you know, so they don't have those heroes. So if you have children, introduce them to astronomy. This is a book that I think, you know, I read it for myself, but I truly honestly think this is actually, it's with the amount of content that's in it, it's still a very good beginner's book. I mean, it's Astronomy 101, but there's actually some really good concepts in there that can get you started into other things. So I highly recommend this book if you're just wanting to learn astronomy or you kind of have a good interest in it and you want to learn a little bit more. There's the link for the book there and throw the cover in there as well. Astronomy 101. And this book's actually part of a series. I didn't realize this at first. Until I just looked it up on Amazon. They have all sorts of 101 books, which are pretty cool. Mythology, philosophy, astrology, and even religion. It's probably a bunch more as well. But Psych 101, economics, US history, architecture, you name it, it's probably there. So anyway, Astronomy 101, from the sun to from the sun and moon to wormholes, warp drive, key theories, discoveries, and facts about the universe by Carolyn Collins Peterson. What a mouthful for the book of the week. Well, that is your book of the week this week, and that is your show for the week. Thank you very much for tuning in. I appreciate everybody tuning in into the chat room. It's great to see so many people in there. Huge thanks to Cindy for producing this show, taking care of everything behind the scenes, making sure everything operates correctly, and to Dita and Paul for their help in the chat room and keeping all the kids in line. And for you, yes, you, not the guy behind you standing behind the curtain, not the guy outside your car, you for listening in to the Paranormal News Insider tonight. And then whenever you listen to it, if it's tomorrow night, well, if it's tomorrow night, that would still be tonight for you. Anyway, let's not get down the philosophical path. And for that, I'll see you next week. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.